here on the line, and so if you could let us know who you are, what plan you're with, and the role you play, and if there's any specific question or theme that you're kind of coming into the call with, that would be really great. So so I'm just going to start a little roll. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Hi. Good. Sorry about that.
That's okay. No problem. I saw that you were trying, so we're happy that you're here. So, Alan, thrilled to have you here. And what I'd like to do before we kind of open up the discussion with starting off with Community Health Plan of Washington's perspective on this challenge, we're going to go around the room and have the other Alliance members let us know, you know, who's in line with us today. So we're going to do a little bit of a roll call here. So, so Alan, first, do we have anyone else with you from Community Health Plan of Washington's team?
There's no one in the room, but I'm not sure if anyone else is on.
Is there anyone else from Community Health Plan of Washington on the line?
This is Jillian Boyette. I am the state program specialist.
Wonderful. Welcome. Great. All right. So I also see that we have Health First registered. Do we have anyone from Health First on the line with us today? Anybody from Paramount? Do we have any folks from Western Health Advantage on the line? Health Alliance Plan?
Hello, this is Rory Lafferty, the Director of Government Affairs at HAP.
Awesome, thank you. Anything specific you're interested in covering today?
Nothing specific, just looking forward to the webinar. Thank you.
Wonderful. Anybody from Sharp Health Plan on the line today? Presbyterian?
Yes, this is Alan Cooley. I work in regulatory operations. Wasn't looking for anything specific today. Just interested to see what other ideas are out there managing relationships.
Wonderful. Scott and White? Neighborhood Health Plan? AvMed? Is anyone else in the line that we've missed that hasn't had a chance to introduce yourself?
I'm Ken Guess, Associate Medical Director for Paramount Insurance.
Welcome.
Southwest Ohio.
Great. Anyone else in the line that hasn't had a chance?
Hey, Chris. Hey,
yes.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Good. How you doing? And we
doing all right.
Good. Lisa Odom, our CFO, and myself are here. We just wanted to listen in to see what other plans we're doing as well. We don't have a huge presence. We're not in any government programs right now, but just wanted to listen in to see what others are doing.
Sure. Great. And I know we had another individual about to introduce herself.
Yes. This is Hannah Zilmer calling from Network Health here in Wisconsin. I'm the government programs manager and just anxious to hear about everyone else's sort of strategies around this and specifically wondering if anyone has experience or tips and how they interact with regulators versus policymakers and the difference in relationships that you develop there.
That's a really great call out. Who else is on the line that hasn't had a chance to introduce themselves yet?
Hi, this is Stephanie with Chinese Community Health Plan in San Francisco. I'm the compliance specialist.
Hi there, Stephanie. Great to have you.
Thank you. Like everyone else, I'm very excited to be on the call and hoping to learn something new.
Is there anyone else in the line that we haven't had a chance to hear from?
Hi, this is Vivian Smith from Valley Health Plan.
Welcome, Valley. Nice to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm so excited to be on the call.
Wonderful. Great. And I think we had another individual just now as well.
This is Cindy Jorgensen. I'm the Director of Medicaid Program Operations for Scott and White Health Plan in Texas.
Hi there, Cindy. Nice to hear your voice, too.
Thank you. Glad to be on the call.
All right. Wonderful. I'm going to go ahead and just get this party going here. So we have about 15 minutes left to us, and I'll be sure to wrap up the discussion maybe 5 minutes before the actual end of the hour, so that way we can kind of regroup and we can see if the group wants to have additional calls on this or related topics. Oftentimes, you know, new topics kind of come out of discussions, and so we're definitely going to make sure we get a chance to ask that question. And then the only other housekeeping item that I'll put out there is that if you do need to log off a little early, you know, we get it, it's middle of the afternoon, folks have other meetings and things like that. When you do exit the visual, for those of you who are on the visual piece, you'll be invited to fill out a survey. The survey is one question. You can handle it. So that's a great opportunity where if you didn't get to give any feedback, or if you have an idea for a related call that you'd like us to organize or something of that nature, definitely take that opportunity to put it in there. And for those of you who might be on audio only and don't have that visual link in front of you, that's totally fine. You can email us. You can email us at the info@healthplanalliance.org, or you can email me directly, kristen.rodriguez@healthplanalliance.org, and that feedback's just so helpful. That way we know that we're planning calls that make sense for all of you. All right, there we go. Housekeeping's done. So Alan has agreed to kickstart our discussion today to describe his group and his team and what they do, both outward-facing and then also facing inward, how they support their internal folks when it comes to understanding the policy and the regulatory environment within which we all operate. So really excited to hear their perspective, and just definitely want to remind everybody, this is a discussion, so feel free to interrupt, ask questions, you know, put forth your own perspective as well. Don't get comfortable on mute there, okay? All right, Alan, if you're ready, let's get it started.
I am, and again, apologies for jumping on a little bit late. So what I thought I would do is give a little bit of an introduction about myself, talk a little bit about CHPW, and then dive into the actual content. And the focus, as Kristen said, I'll talk a bit about our philosophy as it relates to the relationship that we have both at the state level but also at the federal level. And it's both with legislators and regulators, so hopefully we'll touch on one of the comments that somebody made earlier. I'm going to talk about how we staff the function here and what the work actually looks like, and then how we share it out. So that's sort of the overview that I had planned. So again, I'm Alan Letterman. I'm the Chief Administrative Officer here at CHPW Community Health Plan. I've been with CHPW for 10 years. And the Chief Administrative Officer role is sort of an interesting dimension. I'd be interested to hear if anybody else has ever seen a role quite like this. I have claims operations, internal audit, the strategic plan, an area we call payer programs, so that is the contractual relationship with the state and federal governments for both Medicaid and Medicare. I have quality, but that's just on an interim basis, as our CMO has recently retired and we're recruiting for a new CMO. And then public policy, which brings me to this conversation. And so it is that public policy that had me distracted this morning. I'm sure folks have seen the draft discussion document that the Senate put out today. I'm interested to hear Trump's reaction to that when the recent announcements about the House version, and I heard Trump describe that as the House was mean, so I'm not sure how he would describe the Senate. Maybe they're beating Medicaid members with a soft stick, I suppose you could characterize it as. So a little bit about CHPW. We were founded 25 years ago by local community health centers across the state of Washington. Today we're governed by 19 of those health centers, so there's a couple more than that across the state, so not all of them are on our board, although we do have contractual relationships with nearly all of them. We are only in the state of Washington. We serve the Medicaid population, and our total population is about 300,000. 297,000 of that is in Medicaid, and 7,000 is in Medicare. And then we have about 390 people on the exchange. We are the only not-for-profit health plan serving the Medicaid managed care market in the state. We're a 501c4 organization, and that's important because it does give us the ability to do lobbying efforts in ways that C3s cannot do. We also have a sister organization. Actually, our parent organization is a company called Community Health Network of Washington. It is an integrated network that shares risk and best practice and quality performance incentives among those 19 community health centers in Washington. We were founded back when healthcare reform was first rolling out. We have those 19 community health centers have over 130 clinical sites across the states. We have relationships with almost 240 other primary care providers at almost 500 sites across the state, nearly 15,000 specialists, almost every hospital in the states, and actually I think as of July 1, we will have every hospital in the state in our network. So really broad core network. We are nearly 100% funded by Medicare and Medicaid. So when you think about the philosophies transitioning into that, we work with a lobbyist in D.C., and one of the things that really resonated from him in terms of how you think about that, how you think about how you spend your time and how you resource and what kind of priority you put on this policy function and the relationships that you have with the regulators and legislators, his comment was, look at your revenue streams, and that's how you should think about devoting your time and effort. So for us, because we're nearly 100% focused, we should be pretty focused on the policy implications that the state is doing and that the federal government is doing as it relates to Medicare and Medicaid. So we have that core philosophy and have built and invested in ensuring that the legislators and regulators really understand our business, our priorities, and as much as anything, what the implications of their work will be on us. So over time, based on that philosophy, we've really developed an outstanding team. We have 7 permanent staff here, and depending on the season, we bring in 3 additional staff, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. We tend to focus on engaging regulators and policymakers at the leadership and staff levels. We tend to engage the legislature on a pretty routine basis as well. That group also focuses on tracking and monitoring the policies and bills and laws that are working their way through, and we monitor many of them, and we try to influence when needed those as well. The interesting thing about our organization is our policy shop works both on kind of classic health plan issues, but also supporting our unique delivery system. So those community health centers, they're federally qualified health centers. They have special and unique funding and requirements that we will also support. That's primarily at the state level because they've got a national association that they're supported by at the national level. Our works and how, so what does engagement look like to us? That's kind of the next phase of the presentation. Our work is driven by the audience and the issues that we come together with. So by the audience, I categorize that as a state level audience and then a federal level audience. So at the state level, we have staff that focus on areas of expertise. So an example of that is in the state of Washington, we have a lot of activity going on in the Medicaid space related to the integration of the physical health and the mental health, and really broader than just mental health, but substance use disorder and so on. So we have people that focus on behavioral health issues. We have people who focus on dental issues. We have people who focus on kids. And they become the policy experts. We organize ourselves in a team, so it's those seven of us here at CHPW. We also work closely with the Primary Care Association here in the state, so that's a FQHC association of all the FQHCs across the state. They also have a policy team of three, so it's the 10 of us, and then we're supported by three lobbyists that work only at the state level. How we actually organize the work plays out differently depending on the year and the various issues, but there is a common theme across both the state, and you'll hear me say this at the federal level, of maintaining the relationships and becoming a trusted source of information. So continuing to think about the state, we use a really balanced approach. So it's not just our policy team that is trying to build the relationship, but our CEO here at CHPW has about every other month a couple hour meeting with the Medicaid director. On a monthly basis, I have a meeting with the associate director of the Medicaid department here in the state. We also engage with other organizations, so there are advocacy groups that we participate in. There are interest party groups that we participate in to also help resonate and expand our voice. Overall, what we try to do in those meetings with our regulators on the regular basis is strive to share a balanced portfolio. That is, there was a point in time in our history where all we ever did with the regulators was complain to them. They are constantly putting out new laws, new requirements, and oftentimes doing those without funding. And so we found ourselves in a habit of always going down and saying, why do you keep doing this to us, and you don't pay us enough, without ever sharing any of the good news that we do. So we've changed our strategy about 5 years ago now and went to a more balanced approach. So we're very deliberate about sharing some of the good news, some of the successes that we've had, partnering with them or implementing and rolling out issues. So it's not just about complaining, but also about sharing good news. In addition to then those relationships that we develop, our lobbyists are meeting regularly with leadership as well as individual legislators who are on key committees at the state level. And then we as an enterprise, so that is the 19 health centers, the Primary Care Association, and their members descend on the state capitol for a day and a half every year, half a day of policy updates, and we bring in a roundtable to get insights from the regulators and legislators, and then we spend a day up on the Hill, in Capitol Hill in the state of Washington, meeting with individual legislators. The community health centers bring oftentimes their board members to talk about their stories, to share our priorities, and to provide input on the work that we're doing. That work is then further supported by grassroots efforts that we have and support here. So we have what we call Safe Healthcare in Washington. It's not technically a separate legal organization, but it is an initiative that we have a couple people work on. It's grassroots, a grassroots effort to collect and distribute information. I'll dig into that a little bit more in a bit. Switching from the state engagement to the federal engagement, we do have regular visits with our elected officials back in D.C. Typically, there are a couple of us that go three times a year to meet with them. We share on a mix of topics, primarily in D.C. we focus on health plan topics because of the community health centers having their own national representation. We do that in participation with another organization that we belong to of safety net plans like us. Our priority is to meet with every member of our delegation every time we're back there. Oftentimes we don't actually meet with a member of Congress, but instead we meet with their legislative assistant. And we frankly find those more meaningful because the legislative assistants are the content experts on our topic areas. But again, like at the state level, we strive to be a resource and a trusted advisor. And so we're sharing stories, we're sharing good news, we're sharing issues and concerns and implications. So obviously being a Medicaid plan, the fact that CHIP funding for kids is not permanent is a pretty regular topic for us. The issues and implications of being a Medicare Advantage plan, we share insights and issues with, and other specific Medicaid issues. What we found over time is that, and how this plays out is that we are in fact that trusted advisor. So with all the work that has been going on in DC on repeal and replace, we have regular outreach by the legislative assistant staff for support. So last weekend, for example, we got calls from both of our senators that they were doing press events here in Washington and could we support them in those press events. In some cases, they want us to provide the stories, which I'll link to in a moment, but that's part of our grassroots efforts. In others, they just want support at coming to one of our facilities that really serves the underserved. So that is one of the community health centers. They will oftentimes reach out to us when bills are being discussed to get our input on what the implications of that are. So we feel like making the investment that we have has really paid off in that we do get to see draft legislation. We do get to provide input on that draft legislation. I'm going to pause and take a breath, and I'm going to see if there are any questions that have popped up because I'm only using the phone version.
Nobody's been using the chat, but this is a great time for folks to share your reactions so far. We're about 30 minutes into the call. Is any of this resonating with you? Is this similar to your makeup, or is there anything specifically unique that you'd like to hear more details about? You guys are just super excited to hear Alan keep talking. Give me some validation, guys. Give me something.
It's fine. This is good.
All right. There we go. Validated. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So I was able to get a sip of water, and so I'm happy to dive into the grassroots part of the work that we do. Again, we started this initiative, if you will, Save Healthcare in Washington. We carve out budget dollars for it. It was a program that started back when the state was facing some tougher financial times, and given Medicaid funding being such a large chunk of the state budget, we knew that we needed to have initiatives and a priority around what we call the protecting the safety net here in Washington. Through that process, the state was looking at both cuts to funding of the community health centers, because they provide some direct funding of that program, as well as cuts to the Medicaid program overall, cuts in who was eligible, cuts in the time that folks were eligible, and so on. So we started this initiative as a way to get patients engaged in the process. How that plays out today is, as session is about to start, and we don't have a full-time legislature here in Washington, we have a part-time legislature, so they begin convening in, session actually starts in January, And depending on whether it's a budget year or not, it runs through March, although I could put an asterisk on that because this is a budget year for us and they're not yet done, and our fiscal year is at the end of this month. So some degree of concern on that. But we start organizing around this in November, coming up with, prior to that, coming up with what the theme will be, working on some imagery that will go out to the clinics, and then beginning to develop a clinic card program. And what the clinic card program does is collect brief stories from people in the community health centers about the importance of coverage, what it's meant to them, and any kind of message that they would want to send to their legislature. With that, then, we pull, and this is where we need temp support, we pull those cards together. We input them into a system, a database. We do geocoding on that for tracking and for summarization, and then use that during the legislative process to provide input directly to the members of Congress that these people have now written a card to. And we leverage that because we can do it both at the House and Senate level, at the state level, and then also at the governor level. We've also, in most recent years, used that to share messages back with our members of Congress in D.C. From that, we've also been able to gather actual stories, and there's this great story that we gathered this year about somebody who was on Medicaid who literally was in a coma prior to the election, assumed that Clinton was going to wake up, was going to be the president, and when she woke up, learned that Trump was the president and was devastated with the prospects of losing her Medicaid coverage. So we, through this clinic card program, have the ability to gather those stories. And one, if there's nothing else that you get from this presentation from me, if you don't know this already, the power of those patient stories is unbelievable. Again, part of why those senators and representatives call us is because we have access to these stories. They've actually had some of the patients that we've gathered stories participate in their press briefings or in their events. And the other night when the Democrats were taking over the floor of the Senate, we had one of our senators that we shared the particular story I just shared with you, asked for a story, and that's the story we shared with her to be shared on the floor. We can also use that database for action alerts. So we have a process if we need them to act either at the state level or at the federal level to go out and reach out to their elected officials. We have the ability to do that. In the last couple years, we've branched out into using social media, so both Twitter and Facebook, and actually find a better engagement and follow through on the social media than we have previously found on the database and email action alerts that we had been doing. So that's another one that I would encourage you to take a look at if you're not doing today.
Hey, Alan.
That's sort of, yeah.
This is Kristen. So just a second ago, your phone started doing something a little crazy. It sounds like there's a beeping noise. I wonder if you're maybe using a headset or a speakerphone. Are you able to pick up and talk into a handset instead?
I'd have to dial in differently to pick up, and I'm using a conference call phone.
Okay.
So not?
Go ahead and keep going for a moment. It just started, so maybe it'll wear off here in a second. Technology is amazing, and if not, then I think it is fairly distracting. So let's give it another few seconds here and see what happens. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay. So what I've talked about today is more of the external focus, and as Kristen said, we have both external focus, so that is relationship building with the state and federal level. We also do work on more of what I would call an internal focus. And again, internal for us is both the organization, CHPW, so the health plan, but we also provide insights to those 19 community health centers, or really it's all the community health centers across the state in partnership with the Primary Care Association. I'm going to pause. Kristen, is that any better?
For me, it's not. But let me just check in. Is everyone else hearing that, or am I the only one who's hearing that weird beeping sound behind Alan's voice?
I'm hearing it also.
Yeah, I hear it too.
Okay, good deal. So Alan, I'm so sorry because I know that you're in a flow. Is it possible to ask you to hang up and dial in from a different phone because it's kind of drowning out your voice?
Yeah, so I'll do that.
Okay, so sorry, but on the plus side, you'll get more water, so that's good.
All good, yeah. All right.
All right, everybody, while we wait for Alan to go find a different phone and rejoin us, can I ask anyone else who's on the line to maybe share if you have any reactions to what you're hearing so far? Was there anything in particular that you thought was, interesting, you know, we haven't done that before, or anything that resonates because you guys do the same thing in your plan? Anyone willing to share a reaction so far?
This is Hannah from Network Health in Wisconsin. I find it really interesting how often they meet with their Medicaid directors. We don't currently have a Medicaid plan here at Network Health, but about half of our membership is through Medicare Advantage. And we just have a very different relationship with our regulators, potentially because they are not state-based, they are federal, but it sounds like it's a little bit less collaborative than what Alan is fostering over in Washington.
Thanks, Hannah. I appreciate that. I think it's really interesting because I would agree for plans that are MA primarily, usually you're working with a district person from CMS, and that office is often a very different relationship than the central office, right? Are there other folks who are in Medicaid that this maybe is resonating a little bit differently because you are working with state-based issues? Or other comments not related to that prompt?
So, Kristen, I am back on, and unfortunately, I just caught the tail end of the last comment, so missed that point.
No problem. And, Alan, you sound crystal clear on this new line.
Okay.
It sounds glorious. So
good.
Thank you so much for taking that moment to pop back on. And I just asked folks if they wanted to comment on anything that they thought was particularly interesting. And thus far, I think the observation was that for folks that are primarily in Medicare Advantage, it's a little bit different because you're mainly working with a federal relationship versus a state relationship.
Yeah.
Other than that, we're eager to hear more thoughts from you, I think.
Yeah. So what on the CMS, you know, Medicare Advantage side, I acknowledge we've got little less ability to influence that. We're in a dual SNP plan, dually eligible special needs plan. And so that is an area of focus where we have gotten some traction. When we work with our elected officials back in DC, just in terms of how they think about the STAR program and how they think about Medicare Advantage and reauthorization of these SNPs. But yeah, the regulators, they tend to be a little bit more rigid than what we have at the state level. In terms of, so again, turning back to the discussion here, in terms of the focus on the next little bit here is more on our internal side. So some of the things we do there, one is a document that we call a policy digest, and that's a primarily state-focused, although we do bring in, especially this year given all the activities nationally, some of the national scene stuff that is during session, a weekly process. When we're not in session, we do that on a monthly basis to talk about what's going on during the interim. We develop that primarily here at CHPW, but we do partner with others at the Primary Care Association. They will oftentimes write an article for that digest. It's usually a couple pages long. We've got experts associated with it so that if the reader, and again, because it goes to those community health centers across the state, if they have an interest and need more detail, we provide the subject matter expert who wrote the article and a link back to them so that they can dive in more deeply. We also do then during session the document, and I suspect everybody does this, a bill tracker that is a method for us to keep track of bills that either we're interested in, so we will monitor some bills, and there are bills that have impact on us, so that we will typically have an opinion about them. Either we will support them or actively oppose them. And so we work with the Primary Care Association. We work with our internal folks here at the plan, subject matter experts, for example, the chief medical officer or pharmacy director, if it's a pharmacy-related bill, to get their opinion and then work on what is our stance going to be. Are we going to support it? And if we support it, what does that look like and exactly how? If we're going to oppose it, what does that look like? Oftentimes when we oppose bills, and this is true when we are in favor of them, we'll work with other organizations, either other health plans through our association of health plans across the state or through advocacy groups in forming broader support for a bill. That process of bill tracking then keeps track of the bill as it moves through the process and all the way to signing. And then what we do is we can work with our operations area once a bill is signed to internalize that, operationalize that impact that it's going to have. So those are specific to session. We also provide to staff a couple opportunities to learn about what's going on. So we have two times a year what we call brown bag sessions. So they're over lunch. We typically try to provide treats and prizes to engage the audience and to have them come at the beginning of session to learn about what are our priorities, how do we go about developing those priorities, and then at the end of session to learn about how did it go and what is the plans, you know, going forward. What do we think is on the horizon? It depends on the year. I held a special brown bag session earlier this year, just given the election results and the prospects of repeal and replace. And we had about 40 people in the room and another 20 or 30 on the phone. And so that was a bit of a surprise to me. We typically get about 20 people amongst the 400 of us that work at CHPW that attend these sessions. So to get 60 or more people was an indication of how people were concerned and thinking about the impact of the election and repeal and replace. That's the end of what I had prepared to present. I'm happy to take any questions, comments, concerns, anything resonates, anything you think we're doing that we're crazy to do.
Hi, Alan. This is Hannah from Network Health in Wisconsin again. Sorry to dominate the question asking here. Can you explain a little bit about your relationship with the Office of the Insurance Commissioner, or is that not something that you cultivate as much because you don't necessarily fall under their umbrella with your heavy Medicaid focus?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I didn't call it out as much because it doesn't fall into the strict policy focus, but we do, it's a really good call out. It is another one of those regulator relationships that we do in fact cultivate. In our organization, that relationship is primarily housed in the CFO's role, but the CFO and CEO, we make it a point for them to go down at least a couple times a year to the state capitol and meet with the insurance commissioner.
they are oftentimes the entity that is putting out draft legislation or drafting it so that it goes to the legislature. So we're engaged with their policy folks as things are being developed and drafted. And yeah, so that's a good point. What we've done is we've traditionally had our CFO develop that relationship. And it's like anything else. We do spend time with the commissioner, but more importantly, we spend time with the commissioner's staff. We've got a couple people who specifically monitor our organization. So as we were, as an example, developing our support for the own risk solvency assessment, the ORSA process this year, we had quarterly calls with our particular person who oversees our company just to give them a status and to reassure them that we were, in fact, doing that work.
Thank you very much. And then sort of as a follow-up, you know, you mentioned earlier that you do, even with your larger staff focused on these issues, you do still employ lobbyists. How do you draw the line between what your internal staff does and then what your lobbyists do with their billable hours?
So, great question. We have that policy team, so it's the broader team of near 10 people between the two organizations, Primary Care Association and us, meet two times a week virtually. It's phone call based. And really what we do is the work that we're doing here, I wouldn't call lobbying because we're not typically meeting with the actual legislators anyway. We're meeting more with the regulator side. And so what we're doing is the lobbyists are the eyes and ears on the ground. They're actually down in Olympia at our state capitol, and they're meeting regularly. So what we're doing is we're providing support. They may come to us and say, listen, we got this question from this particular person. Can you provide us data? Can you provide us insight? Can you provide us a table that supports that? So we're developing talking points. We're developing the data that is the result of their conversations and what they feel will be compelling. So they're the ones who are out there and being the face. You know, they make it clear they're talking to the Speaker of the House or so on behalf of Community Health Plan or Community Health Network, depending on what the topic is, and we're providing them the data.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Any other questions?
Other questions for Alan? Anybody else want to share what you guys are doing? Alan, do you have any questions for the group, things that you're curious about
that,
kind of validate doing?
That was, you just asked it, was sort of, so what do other folks do? And are, you know, I acknowledge being a Medicaid plan, we have to think about things a little bit differently than a commercial plan, but how do others do this work? Anything that we're not thinking about?
All right, while folks are thinking about that question, let me raise a different one for folks. We have a little over 10 minutes left us on this call. One of the goals that the Alliance has for this calendar year was to endeavor to develop more programming with an eye on plans that are operating in government-sponsored health care, so particularly Medicaid duals, Medicare Advantage, and the exchanges. We have a risk adjustment peer group that's incredibly active because in all of those lines, risk adjustment, of course, is a challenge. This particular topic, this is the first time we've ever really addressed it, and a big thanks to Alan for being willing to bare his soul, so to speak. So if folks are able to share, was this call helpful? Would you like other calls on similar topics? Would you like a different format? Is there other information that we can gather for you that would support your efforts in this area? any feedback would be really helpful.
Hi, this is Alan from Presbyterian, and I did find it very helpful to kind of get a sense of what you're doing in Washington, and you know, it was somewhat reassuring to know that we're doing some of the similar things. I did want to ask if I could, if you've ever, I'm sure you have, encountered somebody, you know, in a regulator position that maybe has an axe to grind against your company, and how you address it, if you speak with them directly. I don't know. I'm just curious what you do in those situations.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear others as well. You know, when so that's part of this priority, and with our previous CEO, we really went through this diligent effort because we had a period of time where since the suit is public information, we actually sued the state because of the way they were executing enrollment assignment, and they weren't abiding by their side of the contract. Well, it's never a great idea to sue the hand that feeds you, if you will. So by doing that, that was the end result of a lot of conversations, primarily between the CEO and the regulator, where the regulators would say one thing but actually do something different. So in the end, we started with those conversations to say, gosh, you know, you said you were going to do this and it's playing out like this, and your staff said this, but they're really doing that. And having the frank conversation to say, you know, you're coming up short, what the problem was, and so why we moved to this model that we have now, was it was only ever the call or the meeting to say you're messing up again, or, okay, here's the lawsuit that we have. So once the lawsuit was settled, and we won, by the way, then we started to invest in time preparing our CEO so that he had a broader vision of some of the good work that they were doing as regulators, so that he wasn't just saying, no, you guys told me one thing and you're doing something different, but also to share some of the good news that we were providing to the patient populations that they care about. So, yes, and those are hard conversations. And, you know, again, in our case, we ended up having to go to court over that difference of opinion.
Hey, Kristen, I had a question for you more.
Yeah, Matt, go ahead.
So as the Health Plan Alliance, I think they have in the past, but for, you know, smaller health plans such as ours, about how you accumulate, you know, support communications, probably more on the federal level, I guess, you know, for health plans that don't have teams of you know, staff on to talk about that, and how you use the Health Plan Alliance's, you know, volume to promote certain messages that would probably run across everybody's, you know, radar and support from a health plan perspective. Do you guys talk through that or think through that a lot? I mean, what are your thoughts on that, being more proactive in that space from a Health Plan Alliance perspective?
First, let me ask one clarifying question. Are you asking about advocacy work, or are you asking more about the information that we curate for the members?
Yeah, advocacy work, and then, you know, helping, again, a plan, small plan like ours, mm-hmm. supporting, drafting communications that we could work with that's, you know, consistent maybe across a lot of health plans, that hits the points that we could communicate with our legislators as well,
mm-hmm.
To kind of have a more unified voice, consistent
mm-hmm.
message, things like that.
That's a really interesting question. I So I kind of have a two-part answer. One, I have to, you know, cross my T's and dot my I's, and I have to say that the Alliance does not do advocacy work. So, you know, we don't have staff in Washington, we don't have any lobbyists, and we certainly don't have that skill set, you know, on our team. So that's not something that membership dues are leveraged to do. As you guys know, I'm sure there's other organizations like AHIP, ACHP, and ACAP. That do that. And many of our members, like Community Health Fund of Washington, actually have memberships in other organizations, associations as well, because they're leveraging that advocacy role from those member dues. So having said that, something that did come up actually just at the spring leadership event that just passed in April was one of our members had a suggestion that I confess I haven't moved on it yet because I've kind of still been thinking through it. But she suggested that that if we could do a better job, if the Alliance could do a better job of monitoring key dates, particularly things like comment periods, like the draft call letter for Medicare Advantage and other opportunities that we have to capture those windows when plans could be kind of galvanizing their own resources, that from her perspective, she said it would be really great if, for example, there was proposed changes in quality programs that we were able to put together a call and have the plans come together, and then folks could just kind of share their impressions, and then you would get a sense of what other plans are thinking as they're pulling together their own comments. And so that would be more of like we're just convening folks, and if people want to do grassroots themselves, right, then a group letter could be formatted. I'm sure you can hear that I'm trying to be really careful. Again, this isn't something that is in our charter that we use membership dues for, but as far as creating a forum that allows plans to network and to get a sense of what other people are interested in doing around that space, we certainly could do that. So reactions to that, does that resonate at all, or would that not really get to what you're looking for?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, last year we joined an advocacy group of some Health Plan Alliance members, but not Health Plan Alliance driven, about risk adjustment. So we understood you guys, you know, the Health Plan Alliance doesn't do that advocacy piece. So we did join a group, you know, that was their sole focus was the risk adjustment and looking at the model and things like that. So yeah, I think what you talked about, I think we would probably participate. Again, we, you know, I don't know how many other plans are like us in the fact that, again, we have limited resources, and we all wear a lot of hats here in small plans, as everybody knows. And so any kind of just talking through things and our thoughts and you know, a lot of the same concepts, I think, resonate amongst multiple plans, and that could be a benefit. I could see that. I think we would participate in something like that. So.
That's helpful. Other folks on the line, is there anyone else that idea sounds like it has promise, that you think that might be an interesting resource, what I just outlined for Matt there? If you hate the idea, I want to know that too, right? Because if it's not helpful, that's good to know. it's really good to know if I'm going to plan a party and nobody's coming.
Yeah, I think, so this is Alan. I think from our perspective, and you know that we're a member of ACAP, so we're fortunate in having that other outlet. So I don't know that we would use it, but certainly for plans that don't have that other sort of association, it's an intriguing idea. And I appreciate, you know, the direction you're getting and the way that you're trying to characterize that, Kristen, and that, you know, I've always thought of Health Plan Alliance as really a solid place to do information sharing and to have calls like this to learn from peer organizations. And that we really rely on ACAP as the plan for sort of advocacy and support on the really federal side.
Thanks, Alan. That's really helpful. So I think that what I'm tempted to say is for, because there are other plans, I know there are other plans like Cox that don't have dual memberships. So, Matt, what I'm tempted to say is I can do a little bit more research. I can go through our membership and identify those plans that we're aware of that don't have that secondary association that they're a member of, and we could do like a quick touch base with folks and see, and if plans are willing to kind of offer up an individual who might be like on a task force for that, then we could plan like what would that look like, and you know, would it be regular calls? You know, would the plans take turns hosting it? Like I mentioned before, we have a risk adjustment work group that's incredibly active, and it's very much member driven. The members take turns hosting those calls. And they really get a lot of value out of them, and you know, that's because one of our members, Jessica DuPont, raised her hand and said, you know, we should do this. So that's absolutely possible. It's just a question of getting the right folks around the table. Any other suggestions or feedback from the group in our last minute here? Would you guys like to see regular calls like this one where it's just kind of sharing? You don't have to answer right now, but maybe noodle on that, or folks do have feedback.
This is Hannah again from Network Health. We would appreciate just hearing everybody else's experiences in their different sectors. So, you know, we are just starting to explore relationship building, so we wouldn't have too much to offer, but we'd certainly like to hear from others.
Okay, great. So other examples, like if we can find other folks like Alan that are willing to talk through their approach.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, great. Wonderful. All right. Well, we are right at the end of our hour, so we're going to call it a wrap. But again, for those on the line, you can hit that one question survey. For those of you who are on audio only, you know, if you're thinking back on the call, if you have feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, please definitely let me know. I want to be sure that we're planning calls and leveraging your time in a way that makes the most sense for you. We did record today's call, so that's going to be posted on this event's page on the calendar. And Alan is listed in the registration list. So if folks have questions that they want to ask Alan independently, his contact information is in our directory. So shoot him an email, give him a call, and I'm sure he'll be thrilled to help folks out. So
absolutely.
With that, thanks, Alan. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon, wonderful rest of your week. And I think the solstice, was it yesterday? Lots of sunshine for everyone to enjoy. Thanks again, everybody.
Thanks,
talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks.